Drive Line on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the new Kia Ceed SW plug-in hybrid.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. As you know now, for over a week, we've been talking, generated by our calls, about the menopause. On Thursday night, stroke Friday morning, we were contacted by Dr. Deirdre Lundy, who was on the programme. Not enough on Friday. She was on the phone and she was addressing some of the issues. Now, she can't answer specific questions about patients, but she will do general issues because Deirdre is now in studio with me. We're in the biggest studio in the place and we are socially distant. And Deirdre, have you heard every programme?
Yeah. I listen to all of them. I listen back to all of them.
And what's your general sense?
It just reminds me of a day in the office, to be honest with you. Yeah. You know, the poor women, like there are so many people who are not being helped, who could easily be helped. But you need to be lucky. You need to have a great GP. You need to have resources that you can maybe pay in mm-hmm. situations where it's not available free of charge. And like a lot of people don't have those things. So this is going to be amazing. We're going to start to rectify those problems for those poor, poor ladies.
Okay. And I was trying to work out, I reckon there could be up to 600,000 women in that age group who are going through the menopause in Ireland at the minute?
Easily.
Why the silence? Is it embarrassing?
I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to empathize because I have no filter. Yeah. You know, vagina is a family word in our house. Do you know what I mean? So for me, it means very little. But I heard Davina McCall say that when she got menopause so bad, she needed to do something about it and eventually took HRT. She didn't tell anybody.
Yeah, including her best friend.
What the heck? What's that about? You should be screaming. Like, I love showing my patches to the patients to say, listen, I'm doing it.
These are HRT patches.
Yeah. I don't pull my trouser down. Yeah, but, I let the top of my trouser down and say, look at my patch, you know.
And Davina McCall said she said she lied to her friends.
Yeah, that's scary.
Because what she didn't, what's the end, feel is the end of her femininity, end of your...
I think we're our own worst enemy, aren't we? Sometimes women maybe more so than men, in that we expect so much from ourselves, perfection. And when we fall short, we feel like we're weak or less than. And maybe if you can't manage your menopausal symptoms with yoga and, holistic therapy or something, you're a failure, which is so not fair. It's not true and it's not fair.
Okay. And what's your title, Deirdre?
Because
is menopause in your title?
No, I'm just a doctor.
Is menopause in any medic's title in Ireland?
No, not that I'm aware of. We don't have a faculty of sexual and reproductive health. We either have a gynecology surgeon or a GP. There's no in between. Like in the United Kingdom, they have the Faculty of Sexual and Reproductive Health, whose job it is to manage menopause.
And that's your umbrella, isn't it?
I use their guidelines because we don't have any Irish equivalent. So were I in the UK, I'd be a consultant in sexual and reproductive health, but we don't have that. So I'm just a doctor.
Okay, address just briefly, because it's going to come up, and it came up right from the get-go last week. This study, I think it's 2002, that I was looking at the headlines this morning. Every newspaper, HRT causes cancer.
That was
the study. And that study has been completely debunked, in terms of its methodology.
Oh, completely,
and in terms of the age group that they said they were using. And they weren't using it, and it was finished early.
Yeah, that
it was
study,
abandoned.
That study has a lot to answer for. That study actually condemned a generation or two of women to unnecessary suffering. It was convened by the National Institute of Health, which is a big American governmental body, and it was looking to see, would certain therapies increase longevity and prevent disease in aging women? So they recruited 16,000 ladies in the United States, all between 50 and 80.
Okay.
And they gave them quite copious amounts of that horse's urine.
Premarin
with a very strong progestogen tablet on top of it. It was called PremPro. And, you know, we don't do that as a rule. We all try to avoid equine estrogen wherever possible. We rarely use oral unless a person is in tip-top health. The women in that study, the average age was 63, which is actually pretty much beyond the worst phase of the menopause.
Okay.
And their main focus, their endpoint was, if we give all women hormones, will we prevent fractures and heart attacks and premature death and aging? And actually, the answer was, yeah, we probably would. But the problem was, that strong estrogen in that older cohort of women had an impact on breast cancer diagnosis. Now, the impact was very, very small. Mm-hmm. It showed that if you were between 50 and 60, used HRT for more than 5 years, your risk of breast cancer went from 23 in 1,000, which is background, to 27 in 1,000, which is a 26% increase. But it sounds much worse.
Statistically.
They don't say like 970, you will never get breast cancer, you know, out of 1,000. But anyway, if you drink a big glass of wine a night, your risk is already 28 in 1,000. And if you're chubby like me, your risk is 47 in 1,000. And they didn't put it into context, you know.
So has it been completely debunked?
I think so. I'd like to think so.
Well, again, looking at the story in the UK, they reckon when that story broke in 2002, it was here as well, it was on the front page of all the newspapers.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
They reckon 1 million women in Britain threw their HRT tablets out.
Overnight. They stopped overnight.
Crazy. Yeah.
This happens all the time. I remember in 95 when they ran a study title that said a new brand of the contraceptive pill doubles your risk of heart attack. Yeah, it goes from like 1 in 1 million to 2 in 1 million. Yeah. And we had 7,000 unplanned pregnancies in the following 6 weeks because people just, like, it's such irresponsible journalism to publish headline medical stuff like that.
Okay, let's Anne, your point, please. Now, Deirdre will write down points and she'll address them. She's not doing a clinic here today by any stretch.
She better be, Joe.
Okay. How are you, Anne? What's your experience?
You know what? I've been listening to all the women all the week and it's, do you know, I'm getting emotional thinking about it.
Yeah.
I think... Poor baby.
I'm 65, right?
Yeah.
And I've been chronically tired for the last 20 years. Yeah. Chronic. And I think it's all to do with the menopause. Yeah. And when I asked my doctor, coming up to, I was in my mid-40s.
Right.
And I went for something else. And I asked him, I said, can I have HRT? And he said, no, it gives you breast cancer. So anyway, I think I could have been started in my 40s. I'm not sure. Okay. But I knew I'd be hit. I think it was about 48 when I went to him and asked him that. And he said no. But anyway, to make a long story short, I got DCIS, ductal carcinoma in situ. The doctor will know that's cancer,
I do.
So I got that in my 50s, 50 when I got that, and I would have been blaming the HRT had he given it to me. So anyway, I got the DCIS in 2007, had part of the boob removed. Then it came back in 2012, the cells, and I had the mastectomy.
Okay.
But I'm still night sweats. I'm still chronically tired. Sorry.
Yeah, take your time.
I'm chronically tired after a night's sleep. Chronic. And it's just affecting my whole life. I'm sorry for getting upset. I'm sorry, but I wouldn't.
And
I'm just looking to know if I can take a patch. Is there something I can take? I have the sore feet, the waist, the chronic tiredness, the low mood, the brain fog, the memory loss, the eyes are blurred.
Everything.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
No, you're... Deirdre.
Yeah, Anne, listen to me. There is a harder hurdle to jump when you've had breast cancer because many types of breast cancer are hormone driven. So it's very tricky to put additional hormone back into the system of somebody who's had a disease that's hormone sensitive.
Okay.
But it doesn't mean that we can't help. Okay, so an awful lot of what we do in menopause care, and we get a lot of advice to the British Menopause Society, who are the people in this country and in the United Kingdom who help us look after people like you, is we have lots of alternative therapies that we can try, medicinal stuff now, not herbal stuff, stuff that we prescribe for a variety of different things. So it's not that you can't be helped, but I think hers would be a special case and she would have to go to special care, you know?
Okay. And has your doctor said anything recently about HRT or solutions?
No, I never asked about it since... I didn't ask about it again.
Why?
Well, I did a bit of Googling and I did.
Yeah.
The bioidentical, I think I saw Oprah something doing it, you know. But I just thought... I didn't think they did bioidenticals here in Ireland, so I kind of threw my hat at it then, you know, or... Life got in the way, and I just.
So, Deirdre, insofar as generally, do women like Anne, who've been told before by their GP, no, HRT causes breast cancer, like GPs, all of us, All of us doing whatever job we're doing. And GP is a very highly skilled job.
Absolutely.
Lots of training, an enormous amount of training and study and exams. So you have to be a certain set. But people can get, medics, professions can get defensive.
Oh, absolutely.
And if Anne goes back, now I'm talking in the generality, Anne.
Yeah.
If you go back to your GP and say, listen, can I have another look at HRT? And he said, you're listening to a radio programme.
I know.
You're trying to tell me I should...
I don't know. It's hard. Like I said, I see both sides of the coin. Like I remember, God, it's going back 10 years ago. I got so frustrated by hitting a stone wall when I would see a lady who has a regular doctor but wasn't getting what she needed. And I would give her some advice. I actually printed out a sheet and I was very cheeky. It said, what's your GP, friends, hairdresser and pharmacist needs to know about HRT and the menopause. And I used to give it to the poor women to say, you know, these are the facts. Yeah. So I'm not doing weird stuff here. This is conventional medicine. Yeah, it's just up to date conventional medicine, you know. Yeah, it's very frustrating.
So should Anne go to her GP or try and get an appointment somewhere?
The whole weekend has been, let's yell at GPs kind of a thing. Let's gang up on GPs. And it's grossly unfair. As you well know, they have been carrying the weight of this COVID as well as many other things. And a lot of them have suggested to me, and I agree, this makes a lot of sense. Email them. Email your own GP and say, I think I need menopause care. And I would be interested in discussing HRT because the phone lines are just...
Yeah, crazy. Yeah.
And then, you know, and then either you'll get a response to say, absolutely, we love that stuff. Make an appointment. Or, and I sent Sally Ann, you know, from the Irish Menopause, and Catherine from Wellness Warrior, I sent them a list, I'm compiling it at the moment, of GPs who specifically welcome other people's patients to talk about menopause and HRT.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's on and I'm not presuming, are you on Facebook or
No.
See, that's a problem.
Now do you think is there someone with you, like you could do it yourself, could you write it, you know, the point you've made to me there clearly about the symptoms that you have.
Mm. Yeah.
Could you write them down on a sheet and post them to your GP?
Yeah.
The postal system.
They're usually very good. I can just
Just put down those points on a letter. And I say to people, we get hundreds of emails here every day. But the thing we open first invariably is the post because it's such a novelty these days. But anyway, if you can, Anne, and we're going to be putting up loads of information as well, and including any information that. Dr. Lundy gives us. But Anne, you're not alone. I hope you got that from the last week.
That's what prompted me to ring.
You were not alone. And there's no silence anymore. Who said yesterday that the menopausal taboo is getting a good kicking? And it's about time in this country that it got a good kicking. Anne, stay safe and keep in touch if you wish. That's Anne. Mind yourself,
thank
Anne.
You. Thank you, Anne.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Joe at rt.ie, 51551, wash your hands. It's a text number. And I'll give out that WhatsApp number in a sec. Mary Walsh, your point, please. You make a general point.
Hi, Joe. How are you? Well, when I wrote into you last night, what I was talking about is the fact that when I was in my mid-30s, I went to get acupuncture for something, nothing of any significance really, not that I can remember. But the practitioner asked me about the menopause.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember at the time thinking, I was horrified. And I was horrified for two reasons, because like, first of all, I thought, oh my God, I'm only 30. Do you realize? Now I know, having listened to your program over the last few days, that there are women out there in their late 20s, early 30s. But at the time, I didn't know that. At the time, I just thought, like, you know, 50-year-old plus women, 60-year-old women, old women get the menopause. So I was kind of insulted to be asked about the menopause. And apart from being insulted, I also hated hearing the actual word menopause. Because for me, the word kind of conjures up images of like old age and the scrap heap, you know what I mean? So anyway, I was 30 at the time. I'm 53 now. So
you're still young,
young. My take on life is a bit different. But at the time, I remember the word menopause scared me, and it still scares me now, I'm going to be honest. But anyway, so there I was, 30, and if you fast forward to 15 years later, so I was roughly 51, I think, and it was 2019. and I was still getting my periods. So at 51, I hadn't had the menopause.
Yeah.
I realise now I was perimenopausal, and I think I learned the word perimenopausal around 40, at the age of 49. I didn't even know the word existed prior to that. But at 51, anyway, had my periods, and I always suffered occasionally from heavy periods, you know, now and again.
Yeah.
So, but at the age of 51, the summer of 2019, I started getting like really, really, really heavy periods. So I put this down to the menopause.
Okay.
And I thought, oh, do you know what now? I'm going through the menopause, heavy periods, blah, blah, blah. And then one day it was, I suffered from a really heavy period. And then one night, about 2 o'clock in the morning, I just hemorrhaged blood, absolutely hemorrhaged blood. And I remember thinking, oh my God, I'm going to have to go to the A&E, but like, how do I get there? And you know what I mean? It was like, I was bleeding, so I didn't know how to get myself there. Anyway, luckily it stopped, and I went to the doctor, and between the jigs and the reels, anyway, I discovered I had cancer in the wall of the womb. So, whereas I was putting it down to being menopausal, and my ignorance, I suppose, of the menopause didn't help, you know. So I had to have an oophorectomy. Now, in the letter to you, I said hysterectomy because it was easier to spell. But anyway, I ended up having my my womb and my ovaries removed. And obviously then with that, I was going to be going into the menopause. But following that, then I had chemotherapy and radiotherapy. So that kind of confused the issue because then I didn't know what was chemo and what was the menopause. So I finished all of that last May. I'm a year. I'm a year out of it now, and I'm happy to say I feel great. I mean, I'm a year over chemo. But
Mary,
I suppose I wanted people to know that sometimes, because we don't know, and I'm very happy to stick my head in the sand because I'm scared of what the word menopause means. I'm scared of the symptoms. I don't, you know, the way there's like a beginning, a middle and an end, kind of a bad menopause, a worse menopause and an even worse menopause. Everybody wants to have the best possible menopause, the lightest possible symptoms.
So what I hear you saying, and your description earlier was brilliant when you were told in your 30s about the menopause. How do you educate? And this is your, these are your, how do you educate people about the menopause, Deirdre, without scaring them? This, like,
I think it's an attitudinal thing, isn't it? Like, I love this time of my life. I'm 60 this year. I'm in better form, I think, than I've been before, you know? But you know, I have to remember other people's menopause. Like, I think of my mother and my grandmother, and it was a different time, you know. I'm thinking house coats and slippers and naps, you know, which we don't have the luxury of.
And we had a phenomenon in Ireland called the nervous breakdown.
Exactly, a little midlife.
I never knew what it was, but
that's what it was.
Women in Ballyferm used to get, she had a nervous breakdown.
Apparently, I read in an article years ago that back in the United States in the 60s, there was a medicine called Mother's Little Helper for the menopause. And it was a combination of Valium and estrogen.
No, thanks. And the premenin, the word premenin, which you told us last Friday on the phone, is the most prescribed treatment in Ireland. It comes from pregnant mares urine.
I don't know this as a fact. This is why I was told this by a pharmaceutical representative, because they have access to like sales figures and stuff. But if you look at what's being ordered out of the pharmacies, there are still quite a large number of women on Premarin or Prempac or Prempaxy, all these products, and they are a combination of a really powerful progestogen, very strong progestogen, and horse, what they call conjugated equine estrogen.
From a pregnant mare.
Which is a cocktail of multiple molecules of estrogen from pregnant mares, which number one is awful for horses, you know, and also not great for women. We want women estrogen when we're using HRT, and that's what bioidenticals, or why we like to call them body identicals. There's a whole bit of fuss about that too. There are some private labs that make unregulated female hormone,
okay,
and they have been a little bit discredited. We're talking about stuff that you can get in the chemists. That's
okay.
All we use.
And it's expensive, by the way.
Yeah, crazy.
Is it, yeah?
Yeah, like my patches cost me about $25, $26 a month. And I know Alton's giving me a break. So, and then my little tablet for my progestogen, I use the best one, the Utrogestin. That's another $16 odd. Like, what if you don't have that? Now, it's all medical card.
Yeah.
You know, it's
covered on the medical.
NDPS.
Yeah,
yeah,
great,
yeah, drugs
okay.
payment. But like, it's still a chunk of change, you know?
Well, if somebody, thanks, Mary, by the way.
Thanks
indeed. Well said. Here's the WhatsApp number. You record a voice message on your phone and you send it to this number, 087-1843-709. Here are a few more messages.
Is it worthwhile considering HRT 8 years into menopause? My story in short is I got the Marina coil in 2002 to regulate the onset of very heavy and additional periods. When the coil was removed, periods resumed. 2009, my period stopped for an entire year, but then came back until August 2013. I have all the symptoms described by other women. Although uncomfortable, I can cope with the hot flashes, but the brain fog, loss of confidence and insomnia are the real killers. It also took me almost 2 years of GP and hospital visits to get a smear test done successfully due to vaginal atrophy. I wondered if it would be worthwhile considering HRT 8 years into menopause, and would a family history in regard to clots be a factor?
Deirdre?
Those are great questions. Vaginal atrophy is absolutely inexcusable. Nobody should have to suffer vaginal atrophy. Like we were talking about Friday, genitourinary syndromes associated with the menopause. Estrogen in the tissues of the vagina are essential. They're essential medicines. You should stay on them for the rest of your life. So everybody with vaginal complaints that are related to the menopause should be using vaginal estrogen, and there is no prohibition. You can have breast cancer and use vaginal estrogen.
Okay.
You do have to be like cautious.
Prescription?
Oh, it's all prescription.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a no-brainer. And then with
expensive?
Maybe 25 a month, I guess. 20,
okay.
25 on the medical card as well.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, definitely. And there's no limit. I mean, all of these drugs, if you open up the product information leaflet, they'd scare the absolute pants off you. They all mention breast cancer danger.
Okay.
They all say use the least amount for the shortest period of time.
Yeah.
When it's not medically sound to do that.
And you're saying they should...
No.
There should be a stronger warning on a bottle of wine about breast cancer.
Oh, my God. And certainly when it comes to vaginal atrophy, it should say, girl, if you need this at 50, you're going to need it twice as much at 70. Don't ever stop.
Okay. And then that caller mentioned HRT, even though she's, 8 years in?
So you're kind of caught between two things. You're caught between wanting to give back quality of life, but you're also watching NICE, the guidelines, and the British Menopause
Society.
NICE
of the British Quality Age.
So there was an interesting study called the ELITE study that looked at the impact of estrogen on the heart. And it found that if a woman, as you know, women are less likely to get heart disease, heart attacks when they're before the menopause because estrogen is cardioprotective. And when we go through the menopause and we lose our estrogen, we end up having the same risk of heart attack as our brothers or our dads. And if you replace the estrogen early in that process, you could actually use HRT as a sort of a preventer for heart disease.
Yeah, yeah.
The worry is in some studies, particularly that WHI one that we talked about, they reintroduced large doses of oral estrogen in much, much older women. And in the first year, they had an increase in heart attacks and strokes.
Okay.
And that was because of the oral estrogen can have an effect on clotting and dislodging the plaques inside of your heart blood vessels. We now know that transdermal estrogen, the patches, the gels, the spray, there's now a spray one, do not dislodge cardiac plaques, do not promote thrombogenic thrombosis. And so people with a strong family history, even in very rare cases, women who've had a blood clot, can very cautiously, very gently be reintroduced to estrogen. But they said that 60 is a good cutoff. Women under 60 probably don't have as much established heart disease, so much heart disease that to give them estrogen now would be risky. After 60, it could go either way. And you would only ever use patches and gel. So those women need to go to menopause specialist. So I don't know how old that lady is. She didn't mention, but I'd certainly, you know, there's loads of doctors would treat her. No question about it.
Okay. Listen, another voice message.
I am almost 75 years of age. At the outset of the menopause, I was prescribed HRT and remained on it for 5 years. After 5 years, my GP recommended that I come off it because of the adverse publicity surrounding HRT at that time, risk of breast cancer, etc. No alternative was offered or suggested. As soon as I came off HRT, I began experiencing hot flushes and sleep disturbance. I have tried all the alternative remedies, but to no avail. I have now been experiencing these problems for the last 18 years. The only solution for my sleep disturbance that was offered to me was to take a sleeping tablet at night. I have been doing that for the last few years, but I still, at the very best, get maybe 3 to 4 hours sleep. I have never got a full night's sleep for the last 18 years. I don't see any alternative at this stage, and I often think I may have to bear this for the rest of my life.
Like, even looking at that a different way, like, if a significant percentage of that woman's life is dominated by those symptoms.
And could have been prevented.
And the same with a lot of women, a significant percentage of their life.
Could have been prevented. The people who released the press, who gave out the press release back in 2002 in the States saying, and this is what they said, our study shows that HRT use significantly increases your risk of breast cancer, which is actually a lie. 1.2%, 1.26 increase is not significant statistically. They actually got sanctioned for, you know, doing unethical things. You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't say those things to the general public. They knew darn well that was going to be picked up by the popular press and really did destroy the entire industry, number one, but also the choices that women had. Now, I didn't change. I looked at a study. A lot of menopause people looked at a study and said, 1.26, please. You know, give up the wine. Go for a walk. I'd much rather stay on my HRT. But that was us. Like, that wasn't the general public, you know?
But if there's 600,000 women in Ireland going through the menopause at the moment, in a broad demographic, what percentage of them do we know are on HRT? They reckon in the UK it's 10%.
Yeah, I'd say it's probably less here. I don't know. Because I don't have like pharmacies would know who's buying what, but I don't have access to that information. I'd love to know.
Okay, Louise, I let Louise in. We're talking to Dr. Deirdre Lundy. Louise Carney, before the break, you want to make a point as well, Louise. Please do.
Okay, hi, Joe.
Hi.
Firstly, thank you so much to yourself and your team for allowing this platform to a greater awareness. Could I just check in with you? From a workplace policy, is there a document with our unions around HR in the workplace?
Because you've done some, is it campaigning in your own company?
Yeah, well, I attended a conference in Richmond Hospital some time back, and it was very much based around the NHS.
Yeah,
the NHS lady had issued the documents to the big trade unions over in England.
Okay.
And I actually work for a UK company.
All right.
So I asked my trade union, which is Unite, could I see the documents? And it was very much based around, down to even the material you're wearing in your workplace. So because I work for an airline, they've changed our uniforms.
Brilliant.
Placed for, and they based that around, I'm sure it was Metropolitan Police in Manchester were the first to do it for their lady employees.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wondered, is there a document that protects menopause in the workplace, just like a maternity document? So in our HR, the HR in each company, do they have a document that protects women going through the menopause?
From what I heard in the last few days, the answer is no.
No. Okay. We don't have anything like that. I mean,
but
can we not take the one from the UK? Can people not just download the one from the UK companies? Like, Louise, I don't know what you heard yesterday, the woman who was in the office going through the menopause, she was having the hot flushes. She had 3 fans on her desk, Louise.
The poor woman.
And her boss gave out to her.
Yeah.
Said she was disturbing the feng shui of the office or some nonsense. The heating system. She was disrupting the heating system. And if he, she referenced him as a he, was aware of the menopause, they would have been doing something. But Louise, Unite's a very progressive union, Kevin Callan and all that. But does your own union have a document? Do you know? Or
well, the Unite in England
do.
I'm based in UK.
Okay.
But I will say I worked with the.
Gone. It's off the line. But anyway, the general question's there. But there is a lot of how recent has the HSE information been updated on the menopause?
It's years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not. I wouldn't consider the HSE as a go-to for reproductive sexual health. Like, we have other places you can turn to.
Where?
So like the Irish Family Planning Association, which is a not-for-profit, a charity.
They've been around a long time.
And they update their information all the time. Yeah.
The NHS.
Yeah, the NHS has access, the patient information services. The women's health arm of that is called the Women's Health Concern. Health Concern, yeah.
Okay, stay with us. Loads more calls after this break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia e-Niro. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia e-Niro with a range up to 455 kilometres.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Now, as I said last week, when the calls start coming in, we set up a WhatsApp line because a lot of WhatsApp voice message line because a lot of women were saying, I don't want to go on air and I don't want to give my details on air, my name or my voice or whatever in terms of identification. So they were maybe too nervous at times. So we set up this WhatsApp line. The number's now gone off my screen again, and it's not even a mnemonic number. We did our best, but couldn't get one. But and that's why, excuse me, I'm saying, please excuse me. That's why I'm not identifying women by a name when I introduce these voice messages.
Hi, my name is Siobhan. I started the menopause when I was 39. It never showed up on the blood test until I was about 44. So I would have had, whereas before that was every 28 days, that was regular as clockwork. Then it got to the point that might be 3 months and I'd have one. Then I'd have two in a month. And this went on and on and on. I even brought pregnancy test kits because I thought I had to be pregnant, but I hadn't even got sex. So when I went on to HRT when I was 47, 48, decided that I was going to come off it, but then had to go back on it. But the HRT eased the muscles, my joints were great, I was sleeping, full of energy. And in December of 19, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, had to come off the HRT, had a mastectomy in February 20, Valentine's Day, and can't go back on HRT because mine is hormone-based cancer. So now I'm back to aches, pains, no sleeping, no energy, weight, again the problem. I don't know, can anyone help me?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah,
it is harder to have that discussion with someone who's had a personal history of breast cancer, no question about it. And 99.9 times out of 100, the answer will be some other medication, not HRT-based. But I have to tell you, I do have myself as patients, and I know of others, where women who have tried every alternative, given it all the best shot possible, and have decided themselves that their life is not worth living as it is, and want to return to HRT after breast cancer in spite of the concerns. Okay. That's not that unusual, but it's rare. It's not a quick thing we do. There's a famous UK doctor, Dr. Tina Pears, who I know, she's a delightful woman, and she's had two bouts of breast cancer and has put herself back on HRT both times. But that's an exception to the rule. That is not standard medicine by any stretch, you know.
Okay, but you have a fantastic diagram there. Just to reassure people again, because this is what's coursing through the calls all in the last 7 days, and that is that I went for HRT and the doctor said cancer.
So write this down. HRT does not cause breast cancer, but if you're unlucky enough to have early cancerous changes in your breast and those cancers have hormone receptors on them, particularly estrogen and progestogen receptors, using hormones for any length of time could promote the development.
Okay.
But the disease was there. It didn't come at it.
Okay.
It's not an oncogenic medicine is HRT, you know. So it's more, it promotes cells. It doesn't cause cancerous cells, you know. So I think there's a huge fundamental lack of understanding there. And this study is just to say that you got to remember these were elderly, older women, many of them elderly, using high dose oral.
Okay, this is a debunked study.
Yeah, like now we use the molecule of estrogen that I'm on in my patch or that I prescribe in a gel. Those are the two body identical versions that we have in Ireland, is identical to the 17 beta estradiol that comes out of a natural ovary. So we don't have tons and tons of huge information. Like this study was huge, 68,000 people recruited, 16,000 took HRT. But smaller studies have shown the newer HRTs to be even gentler than that. And that wasn't that bad.
Okay. Christine, your general question, please. Good afternoon, Christine.
Yeah, hi. Yeah. I just quickly around my story. I had my womb, ovaries and cervix removed at 52. I went straight into menopause and they put me on a high dose of Premarin, which I have taken for 14 years. I lost all my sex drive. I'm off the Premarin now 2 years and the sex drive hasn't come back. So I have some menopause symptoms, but I'm coping with them. But it was just like, am I going to be like this non-feeling sexual person for the rest of my life?
Deirdre?
Well, I would like to talk about sex drive because for women, it's a little bit more nuanced than it is for some, not all men, in that hormones do play a large part. There's no question about it, but so do about 15 other things as well. So you're just your general mood, your energy. Like, you know, there are women who couldn't even entertain the concept of having sex unless the dishes are in the dishwasher and the dog is put to bed. You know, we have a lot of, it's not our priority. You know, it's not always a good night's sleep takes preference in many cases, but like, but that's just us. But when your ovary starts to become unreliable and eventually packs it in altogether, you don't just lose estrogen, you lose testosterone as well. And that for women is often the deal breaker when it comes to sex drive. So more and more now, menopause care specialists are saying, if we're going to be trying to improve your quality of life with estrogen, and if you have a womb with progestogen as well, would we also consider a little testosterone? And it is licensed for improvement of low sex drive in menopausal women. The only problem is in Ireland, we don't have any licensed women's testosterone. The only people who make it are in Australia, and by the time you get it over here, it costs €1 million. So what we do, which is it's not naughty, it's just Irish, we prescribe men's testosterone to our menopausal ladies in tiny doses, not transgender. I don't know who the hell said that on Thursday or Friday.
Yeah, someone was real worried. If I give you testosterone, you'll turn into a woman. You'll turn into a man.
Why do they say this stuff? Why don't they just say, I don't know what I'm talking about? I have no idea what I'm talking about. I'll give you some, you know, I'll give you an email address or a website. So no, it absolutely doesn't make you transgender. I mean, we can do that too, but I don't think that's what people are looking for, you know. So yeah. Testosterone replacement, absolutely doable. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Christine.
Thank you.
Okay. Mind yourself. Myra, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And Deirdre's here with me. Go ahead, Myra.
Well, Joe, at age 46, almost 30 years ago, it became necessary for me to have a hysterectomy.
Yeah.
And the gynecologist advised me that the ovaries would not be removed in order to avoid an early menopause.
Mm-hmm.
But short, it was the day after the operation, he came to me and he said that it was necessary to remove the ovaries.
Okay.
So then in the hospital bed, Joe, I was covered in wet sheets, a soaking nightdress, soaked in perspiration, feeling very hot and very agitated. I just didn't feel like the person I was before the surgery. So the following weeks, Joe, were extremely challenging. I felt as if I had a personality change. I had no sleep. I was agitated all the time. I was depressed and finding it difficult to cope with my very busy life. I was working at that time, Joe, full-time outside the home and enduring a very difficult personal life. So I went back to the gynecologist, Joe, and he recommended HRT. I started it immediately and it was magic. Absolute magic. I felt like the person I was before the surgery, full of energy, in good mood and everything. But so then, just less than 3 months later, Joe, I was diagnosed with breast cancer and had to have a mastectomy. Now, my surgeon was the wonderful Professor Niall O'Higgins at Vincent's Hospital. And he said I would have to come off the HRT immediately because it appeared that my cancer was hormone-driven. He said that the cancer could not have been caused by the HRT because I had been on it for such a very short period. So we had a little chat about it and he said, perhaps I would like to get a second opinion. So I went to see an oncologist and the oncologist said, no, I must not have HRT. So from that age onwards, Joe, I was 46 up to age approximately 60. I suffered from anxiety, lack of sleep, hot flushes, memory loss, panic attacks. And life was just hell on earth. And then I had my last hot flush when I was 72. And now I'm in perfectly good health again.
Great.
But, Joe, I think if I had my days back, I would take my chances and take the HRT in order to have a quality of life.
Yeah. You put it so well, Mara.
And you know, somebody... Some of the advocates, doctors, colleagues of mine that, you know, I go to the meetings in the United Kingdom and stuff would say that should have been your choice. You know, like we get so afraid sometimes that someone's going to sue us. You know, I got breast cancer because you gave me HRT. Yeah. You know, we're an informed choice by an educated patient. That should be.
Well, the COVID has changed. That's what we're all getting, this informed choice.
And
people are now much more familiar with the whole thing that the benefits far outweigh the risk. And that's now part of our...
The other
thing that's happened in COVID as well, we've gotten to know a lot more GPs in the country through the media.
That's true.
All, without exception, fantastic.
Oh, they're heroes. Literally
really
heroes.
Fantastic in terms of knowledge. Now, and again, I'm transposing that, Deirdre, with the two cases we were talking about.
Yeah.
One, the doctor said, I'm not giving you a test. That's wrong because you're turning into my... And then we had a doctor. But again, it's of a different era, hopefully, where he held the woman's hand and said, you know, women at your age, forgive my language, do turn into bitches.
Yeah. That was shocking, wasn't it?
Shocking.
Yeah.
But that was hopefully in the past.
If ever a GP starts a kind of a discourse with, well, I may be getting old or I may be too old for this, the answer is, yeah, you are.
Okay. Mara, thanks indeed. Thanks indeed for that story and empathy in terms of what you went through. But thanks, Mara, and appreciate it. Back after this break. 51551, my friend.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the new Kia Ceed SW plug-in hybrid.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Okay, let me hit a few readies here. Thankfully, I've had a trouble-free menopause, Deirdre. Should I request HRT?
No.
Okay.
No.
Can I ask the doctor, are the symptoms of menopause more severe if I have not had children?
No.
Okay. I turned 42 a month ago. I've hair loss for the last few months. Went to a doctor, said it's localised, nothing to worry about. Last 6 weeks, hot flushes multiple times a day, sleep problems. He took my bloods. Does blood?
Yeah.
Will blood tell me if I'm going through the menopause?
Absolutely not.
No.
I want to talk about that.
Okay.
So we do blood tests about hormones in exceptional cases when we're dealing with menopause symptoms. So if somebody's under 40 and they have symptoms that are reminiscent of the menopause, I'm going to do a million blood tests, as well as maybe genetic 40, screening and all the rest. But anybody over 40 who comes in with classic menopausal symptoms is menopause until proven otherwise, and blood tests are not diagnostic, because the whole nature of the condition is that your hormone levels are doing this. You could take a blood test at 8 o'clock in the morning, and by 11 o'clock in the morning, they'd have been 10 times different. So blood tests are inappropriate for diagnosis of the menopause. That's not to mean to say I wouldn't maybe do a thyroid, do a full blood count in someone who's bleeding heavily, you know, that kind of a thing. Another thing that happens all the time I hear from patients is, my GP told me that I couldn't be in the menopause because I was still getting periods, and that's rubbish. Many women are getting regular monthly cycles, which means they could still get pregnant, and they require contraception, but they're also getting the flushes, the sweats, the mood variations, the hair changes. So sorry, you can totally need menopause care and contraception. And we actually
So give me a response when I come in and I say I have these symptoms, have flushes, sleep, anxiety, crying, all the things we've been hearing about. Will you do a blood test, Deirdre?
I'll do a blood test if you want a blood test, but it's not going to help me diagnose you.
Am I going
you.
Through the menopause?
Oh, I can tell you right now you're going through the menopause. Okay. Yeah. Okay. If it looks like a duck and it sounds like a duck, you know.
Okay. Breda Birmingham. Breda, good afternoon. Hello, Breda.
Hello.
Yeah, you've set up menopause cafes in Waterford.
Hello, Joe. How are you? And thank you very much for covering menopause for the last week or so. It's absolutely wonderful. I run the Midlife Women Rock Cafes every month. We started in Waterford, but we're now actually on Zoom, so women from any part of Ireland can join us. And I'm also a menopause researcher. I did a sociology master's last year on menopause in Ireland. And the big red flags, Joe, that were coming up were a voracious appetite for information by women, and silence is the real enemy here.
Silence,
Silence, fear, shame, and denial. They were coming up, they were repeated narratives that kept coming up in my own research here. And I was just listening to Dr. Lundy, and she's absolutely wonderful. But again, from working with hundreds of women in the UK and Ireland over the last 2 years, I discovered that HRT is just part of the whole puzzle of menopause. It's women actually understanding what's actually happened to them. And what we have to remember is that what you're doing this week is you're unearthing decades and decades of silence around this time in women's lives. And the shame is a huge part of the story.
And I think, Breda, so and that just struck me as well last night. We're not calling on the government to change the law. We don't want new laws. It's about education and availability of HRT.
And funding.
And money, yeah.
I can't do what I do. I would never be able to do what I do on the kind of funding that goes into general practice. General practice is supposed to deal with your whole complaint in 15 minutes, less if possible. Like, how on earth would I get through any of this? In 15 minutes, you know?
Deirdre, that's where I think the cafe model is absolutely wonderful, because it's women sharing stories with each other, and in doing so, they're actually supporting each other. It's demystifying. Brilliant.
Amazing. It's amazing.
Menopause is actually all about.
And it's called the Midlife Women Rock Cafe.
Cafe,
yes. That's
okay. I'm on Zoom, so women from anywhere in Ireland are more than welcome to join us. And that's what's actually
And Breda, your PhD, you said you did, was it psychology or sociology?
I did a degree in psychology, and then I discovered that there was a massive injustice to women. So I went in and I did a sociology master's looking into why this has happened.
Is that available publicly?
It's available if you go into Google Scholar and Google Silence Taboo and Midlife Women. That's the title
Brilliant.
Of the master's.
I'd love to read that. And Google Thank Scholar. Silence?
Silence Taboo.
Taboo.
And Midlife Women.
Says it all. Okay.
2020.
Okay, Breda Birmingham, thank you so much. Here's another voice message.
Hi, Joe. I'm histamine intolerant and have suffered from anaphylaxis due to an allergy. And according to research, HRT makes histamine intolerance worse. And so this issue of histamine intolerance needs to be addressed before a woman gets HRT. I would still like to get HRT, but I need a doctor who has an expertise in the menopause and histamine intolerance.
I don't know any I don't know anybody myself, I'm afraid, but in the UK, both Dr. Tina Pierce and Dr. Louise Newson, who you mentioned yourself, they are much more knowledgeable in that area. And so
and they're very accessible websites.
Absolutely.
And even if you don't use a website yourself, someone in your family or friends will be able to
Of course. And now there may be somebody in Ireland who's knowledgeable. I'm just not that person.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's a man's voice in the message. Oh, Matt is there. Sorry, Matt. Good afternoon.
Oh, hello. How are you, Joe? How's
Good.
It going?
I read your email earlier on. It's heartbreaking, but tell us your situation.
Joe, like I was unwell for many years, and without my wife, I wouldn't be here today.
Okay.
And that's where, apart from medical intervention, serious medical intervention, but my wife is an angel, an absolute angel, and a beautiful, beautiful woman. And, you know, she started the menopause early in her life. And like she's in her late 40s now. And in the last number of years, she has just gone downhill. Insomnia, I've counted no sleep for 72 hours. I'd wake up some nights, Joe, and the bed would be soaking wet, but she wouldn't be there. And I'd come downstairs and I'd find her crying. And heartbreaking, you know, to see a woman I love dearly deteriorating. And, you know, she was she is on Premarin, and how can I say, for quite a number of years. But now I think it's good. I think that's run its course, basically. I think that drug has run its course. And listening to all the other ladies there, and fair play to the women, you know, for bringing this up and highlighting this. And from a man's perspective, I think I'm trying to cope with understanding this. I try and take each day at a time. It took me years to understand it, but listening to the show, Joe, for the last number of days has really opened up my mind to what's going on with my wife and how can I help her now? I need to help her now, the best I can. I mean, Joe, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for women. You know, we wouldn't be here. The whole economy based around women.
The health service in the last year, when you think of the number of GPs, the number of medics at every level in our health service are women.
Of course,
you know.
Matt, where's your wife now?
My wife is in the kitchen, Joe. Initially, she wanted to...
No, she's okay.
Yeah, she wanted to leave a voicemail, but she kept crying every time she was attempting to do so.
Yeah.
And it breaks my heart, Joe. You know, it just breaks my heart to see her like this. And I want my wife back. And, this afternoon...
You want your wife back and she wants her life back.
Yeah, she wants her life back. I mean, look, a happy wife is a happy life for everybody. Imagine a society, Joe, where all the women were happy. The benefits of that is for everyone. Okay. That's men, especially.
Premarin. How long has she been on Premarin, do you know?
Nearly 9 years.
Yeah, might be worth a change. You know.
That's what we've been discussing, Deirdre, and we've been researching what options are available, contacting chemists to see what was available there. You know, just to kind of get. I mean, information is key here to dealing with this.
And would she be open to saying it to her GP again about HRT?
Yes, that's on the cards today.
Okay,
That's going to happen today, Joe. But I'm not one to sit around. And watch this happen. This is not going to stop until my wife gets herself right and that she's happy in her life. Because if she's happy in her life, I'm going to be happy in mine. You know, we're together 30 years, Joe, and we're inseparable. And to see a loved one go down this route, it's unacceptable to me as a man. It's unacceptable to me, Joe. And I get a bit upset about it, to be quite honest. Listen to them poor women on there with their horrible stories. They're like the forgotten women of the country. It's disgraceful, you know. It's like a modern-day Titanic, you know. I mean, women and children forced back then, but now it seems the other way around, and it's not right, and it's not fair, and something needs to be done about it.
Okay, and something is going to be done in your household. I can hear the energy as well as the upset in your voice.
I'm so positive, Joe, about getting this right. My wife, I'm not one to let these things slip aside. And I'm afraid of no man. I'm afraid of nothing. And I'm going to make sure my wife has her life back.
Okay.
For sure.
Well said. Thanks, Matt.
That's lovely. And, you know, I get couples sometimes. Couples will come for menopause care. And, you know, and it's not that kind of misogynistic, you know, fixer. It's like I love her and she's not right. And it's beautiful when it happens.
Where are you from originally, Deirdre?
I was born in New York. My both parents are from New York, but my four grandparents come from Down, Louth, Westmeath and Kerry.
Okay, and how did you come to Ireland?
Well, when I was in high school, I really wanted to be a doctor.
Okay.
And as you may know, there's a lot of expense involved with that in the States.
Yeah, yeah.
And I might have gotten partial scholarships, but I wasn't that smart. So my cousins had said, you know, university in Ireland is very reasonable if you're an Irish citizen, which I am. So I was like... I went to Alex for 2 years. I did this thing called the Leaving Cert. I'd never heard of it before.
Okay.
Didn't get it, but I got the matric. Okay. Thank you, Jesus. And then ended up in UCD.
And that's right. And the phrase used in Ireland is the time to change.
Yeah,
she's
yeah.
going through.
She,
the change.
It is. It is a change.
Is that, is that the language that's in the States? Is that the language in the States?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I've only ever heard the change in England and Ireland. I don't know what they call it. I don't think they talk about it that much in America.
Okay, Dorcas Barry. Dorcas, good afternoon.
Hi, Jill. How are you?
Good.
Hi, Deirdre. How are you?
Hey, Dorcas.
You're saying workplace trainer with henpicked. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's called Handpicked Menopause in the Workplace. They're a UK-based company.
Okay.
And they're 4 years working in this space, so they would be very much considered the leaders in this field.
And you've done you've done research around a large tech organisation on investigating women's experience of the menopause in the workplace. Tell us.
Yeah, so yeah, I carried that out last year as part of a master's program.
Yeah.
And when I completed that, based on, you know, my interest in the subject and the results that I found out, I wanted to do something. I wanted to help women and I wanted to be a part of the change. So that's when I trained as a trainer with Henpicked. And I've been working and doing awareness training now with lots of different organizations with them.
And then you say 8 out of 10 menopausal women are at work. So what was the were the findings of your research in Ireland?
In the research, I mean, there's very little research been done in Ireland, if any. I've actually spoken with Deirdre about this before because we've been in contact. But I wanted to find out. I wanted to do like an investigation to find out what were the issues.
Okay.
And now the results that I got were very different to the results that are in, you know, generally in the UK. But I think the reason for that is because the situation is very different. The UK are definitely ahead of us in terms of awareness. And the medical provision, as Deirdre, I'm sure, would agree with well, is different in this country than it is in the UK, too. But in the research that I did, pretty much 100% of the women were experiencing symptoms at work that were affecting them at work.
Okay.
And emotional issues were coming up very high. And the big issue, one of the biggest issues, was all around the stigma and taboo. And and something like over 90% of the women that I interviewed said they would never go to their line manager or their boss to discuss it.
90%, so, wow.
Yeah, yeah. So like that really highlighted a huge issue. And we know from the UK research already that is consistent. Line managers in organisations have a huge part to play in opening up this situation and making women feel more comfortable about coming to have a conversation.
Yeah, and you say menopause cafes are being mentioned. Obviously, now with COVID and Zoom, would a menopause champion in a company convene a Zoom meeting and ask, does anyone want to participate in a conversation about the menopause over Zoom? Each company should do it.
Exactly. I mean, we do awareness training. We do for everybody. And I was absolutely delighted to hear that you had a man on discussing his experience just now.
Yeah.
Because you'll often see it quoted in places that menopause affects 50% of the population. That's not true. Menopause affects 100% of the population.
Good point. Yeah.
And one of the companies that we've worked with, one of the rail companies in the UK, we've done awareness training with them, with their line managers and for all employees. And they have an 80% male workforce. But because train drivers have to sign a form when they go into work every day to say they had a good night's sleep, it was only when one train driver said, "I can't sign this. Have you ever slept beside a menopausal woman?"
Wow.
That the company looked at their age profile of all of their employees
and
they saw that all of their male drivers were of that, you know, similar age group. And on the basis of that, they delivered training for everybody. So,
excellent.
It really is for everybody, because no matter whether it's your mother, your sister, your friend, your wife, you know, you're, it's having the information and the knowledge about how menopause can affect women and the symptoms that they can experience is huge.
Okay, that's okay. And even by calling on someone in a company, someone take a leadership position, say we're going to have a Zoom meeting about the menopause. Anyone, I don't know, do we confine it to women to start with, but we're going to have a conversation and you can mute yourself, you can turn off the screen, but you can still participate. Mm. Okay, Dorcas Barry, thanks indeed. A question,
Joe, could I just say something to you just quickly about the COVID situation with regard to this and the point you're making about Zoom, which is actually a really good one. And we have found since in our training that we switched to online when COVID hit.
Yeah.
And actually what's happened is that the participation in the webinars is absolutely increased enormously.
Brilliant.
Because women feel so much more comfortable when they're at home that they can attend these sessions. So you're absolutely spot on.
Okay,
online is a really, really good way of presenting this information.
And we'll put all that information up. Dorcas, thanks indeed. I am a 64-year-old, never had HRT. My doctor said it caused cancer. He also said I could have the symptoms into my 70s, which has really depressed me. I have all the symptoms, insomnia, restless legs, thinning hair. I got to the stage where I won't quit without a hat. Is it too late for me to try some form of HRT?
I never say never. There are guidelines and rules. And obviously, you know, you try to stick within them. But if the need is great, exceptions can be made,
Is it true that the average weight gain in menopause is 10 to 15 pounds?
Yes.
I'm trying to lose weight. My metabolism has ground to a halt. Any advice? Is it 10 to 15 pounds?
If not more.
Okay.
And it tends to go from the gluterofemoral area, like your butt and your hips, to your belly, which is awful.
Okay. And HRT will address that?
No. Doesn't do a thing about it. But at least you can go out and take a walk when you can sleep at night.
Yeah. Okay. Is your bladder affected by the menopause?
Completely.
Okay. Amanda on the voice message.
Hi, Joe. My name's Amanda and I've been going through the perimenopause since my mid-30s. I'm now 43 and have recently been prescribed HRT in the last 7 months. It's actually given me a whole new lease of life. You know, I'm still relatively young to be experiencing what I have experienced for the last five to seven years. So I just want to thank you so much, Joe, for addressing this subject on the airwaves. And thanks to Sally Ann and the Irish Menopause Support Group, who have really helped me over the last while.
Okay, thanks, Amanda. That number, by the way, for your WhatsApp message, your voice message, is 087-1843-709. I'm with Dr. Deirdre Lundy. She's in studio with me here, and we'll be back after this quick break.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia eSoul. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia eSoul, with a range up to 452 kilometres.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
With Dr. Deirdre Lundy, we're talking about the menopause as we have been now for over a week. A caller, Deirdre, saying it's much cheaper, the medication up north, over the border.
Yeah,
I live
really
in Dundalk, I slip over to Newry.
Yeah, loads of women are doing that. And Sally Ann started that. You know, she told me about Paddy Corey up in Tyrone, who was doing private scripts. So apparently the law is that if a doctor in the Republic writes a script, it can be filled in the north.
All Ireland
kind of a deal. And because most northern pharmacies are primarily NHS, they don't charge their patients.
Okay.
When they get a private script in, they don't put much, doesn't seem like they put much of a markup on it.
Okay. Well, Caroline, what has been your experience of money and HRT?
Hi, Joe. I live on the border and I was actually at my menopause person yesterday.
Okay.
And I had to pay €200 for the visit.
Is that here in the Republic?
Yeah, €200 for the visit. And I wish he had been as nice as Deirdre, I have to say.
Okay, well, that's sweet.
Anyway, because I'm on the border, I am really lucky because I'm able to scoot up the north of Ireland.
Okay.
And the difference in price for my medication, which costs in around €40 down south per month, is €12 up the north.
Wow.
It's a massive difference in price.
So you can get your script.
Same medication, same brand, same everything.
Yeah, but you can get it for 6 months up north, what you pay for a month down here. Is that right?
That wouldn't be that much, but 3 months, three times cheaper.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and they take, well, has it changed since Brexit, Caroline?
Well, I have to be honest, I've been posting up and down, so they will post. I can post up my original script to them, and they will post it down to me. And they have a whole system in place to deal with that.
And the menopause, or the medication for the menopause, is not covered on medical insurance?
I don't think any medicine is on medical insurance.
Okay, I'll take your point. Yeah, okay.
No, and neither is the doctor's visits covered by medical insurance.
No.
Okay. And when you went to your consultant about the €200 you said for the consultant talked about the menopause, can you claim that back of your medical insurance?
Well, it wasn't my first visit, first of all. I've been on menopause for a year, but I noticed myself regressing, and I knew I needed to see her to get it tweaked. So you can claim part of that, depending on your policy, if you have a private medical insurance policy or not, depending on the policy, depends on if you can claim back or not.
Okay, well, there's an issue then, the prices of medicine down south again. Another WhatsApp question.
I'm 63 years of age. I'd like to ask Dr. Lonnie, is there any hope for me? Can I have anything to take for what I've been going through for the last 20-odd years? X-ray from head to toe, blood tests, breast clinic, where I was told eggs in my breast was normal for my age, nothing to worry about. Don't get me wrong, I'm glad the diagnosis, but my problem is still not solved. Is there anything I can do, as menopause was never mentioned are approached by any of the doctors?
Did we ever think we'd hear a question, I'm 60 years of age, is there any hope for me?
Of course. I mean, it's a heartbreak.
Because you're the woman. That's what you're saying. I'm a woman.
Yeah.
It's going through the menopause. Every woman goes through.
Is
there any hope for me?
And this is natural, so you're supposed to just suck it up. You know, this is what comes for women. So we should just suffer and keep our mouths shut, you know? Yeah.
And there is hope.
Of course there
is. 100% hope. 100% hope. Mary, your question, please. Hello, Mary. Yeah, go ahead, Mary.
Hi. I was into early menopause after my last child, in my 30s. So I was about 40 by the time I was diagnosed. I was on HRT for about 9 years. I have come off it, and I'm 59 now, and I feel I need to go back on it.
Okay.
I did have a chat with my doctor last week, and she said no, she wouldn't recommend going back on after being off it for about 9 years now.
And
so what should I do?
Get a second opinion.
Okay. Fine.
That's what I do. Because, you know, like I said, nice guidelines are exactly that. They're guidelines. They're not, it's not a Bible.
Well, give me the language, dear, to when I go into my doctor then and I meet resistance.
Can you point me in the direction of somebody with expertise in menopause and HRT?
Can I say, can you put me on HRT for 6 months and let's see the difference? Would you even try that, doctor?
It might work. I mean, you'd be better off with somebody who's really into it, to be honest with you. Okay. Because a lot of the kind of issues that can arise with HRT will arise at the beginning. You know, once somebody's established on it, you're golden. It's the starting off is when you're probably at the most in need of good advice.
Can Mary go in and say to a GP, I want HRT? She can't.
She should be able to. She can't. It's entirely at the discretion.
I thought I could.
Yeah.
I was advised to go in and do that.
Yeah. And can you? Have you? Have you?
And that's a medical, legal thing. Like we hold the baby when it comes to if something happens to you.
Especially in Ireland, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Mary, do you have the option of going for a second opinion from somebody?
I can do. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yes. Talk to look at Sally Ann's group.
And if you haven't heard the full program today, Mary, listen back to the material and the way Deirdre phrased language around what you were going through earlier on, and I think you'll get a lot more guidance as well in terms of what you should do, and hopefully it will embolden you to look for a second opinion and give you strength and confidence to look for that. You deserve it, to say the least.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Mary. Martha.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Martha. Your point, please, your question, or your general statement. Go ahead, Martha.
Hello, Joe. Well, I just wanted to say specifically that I really feel that the menopause for me was a horrendous time.
Yeah.
It began when I was 47. I'm 62 now. While I am much better than I was, I still have a lot of hot flushes. I don't sleep well at night. Mm-hmm. They're my main symptoms. But over the years, I mean, I had palpitations, nausea, yeah. Hardly any sleep, getting up to go to work in the morning. With hardly any sleep and wondering how I was going to get through the day. Memory loss. Yeah, I was working full time. Yeah, and in a busy and challenging job.
Could you raise it in your job, in your work?
No, I did not feel at all comfortable about doing that. I never mentioned it to anyone. I never felt the space was there. It just wasn't. I educated myself as much as possible. I read as much as possible.
Yeah,
I did all the right things like yoga, walking, diet. I kept myself fit. I always did. So I never expected this to happen to me. And it absolutely hammered me, you know, when it came.
And then you were on HRT. You say it was amazing.
For 2 years. For 2 years. And then I began to have a regular bleeding. And my GP sent me to a gynecologist who insisted that I would stop it immediately. And he did not understand. I tried to explain, you know, that I needed it to cope with work.
Yeah.
And he just couldn't understand my point of view. He said, you are putting your health at risk. You can get breast cancer, all these other problems.
How long ago was this, Martha?
So I'm talking now about 10, 12 years ago. Yeah. Yeah, about 10 to 12 years ago, yeah.
But I mean, the rules now are the same as they were then, and that was rubbish then, and it's rubbish now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Back after this break. Thanks, Martha.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia e-Niro. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia e-Niro with a range up to 455 kilometres.
If you have a TV, you must have a TV license. It's the law. Make your payments easy with yearly, twice yearly, quarterly or monthly direct debits. See tvlicense.ie for more. Your TV license, made easier. Brought to you by the Government of Ireland.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Deirdre Lonnie's going to finish the programme.
I would like to end on a positive note. The voices have been amazing. Ladies, you need to know that there's help out there. Or ask your GP, email your GP. If they're not in a position to help you, get a name of somebody who can. Talk to Sally Ann and have a look at Instagram. And keep positive because there's so much we can do for each other.
Okay, and then you say, today's program was produced by Rebecca Meehan.
Today's program was produced by Rebecca Meehan.
And give me a last word on the menopause.
It gets better.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia e-Niro. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia e-Niro with a range up to 455 kilometres.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.